without being in such a relationship, as master and servant,
Iham,
here, Avayo, our, Arthaha,
any motivation.
The Lord is the pure master. And Prahlad Maharaj is pure devotee. Without any material motivation. Raja, of a king. Shevakayo, and the servitor. Eva, like. Just as a king exacts taxes. For the benefit of the servant. Or the citizens pay taxes. For the benefit of the king. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant and you are my eternal master. There is no need for our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. Please repeat after me. O my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant.
I am your unmotivated servant.
And you are my eternal master.
And you are my eternal master.
There is no need of our being anything.
There is no need of our being anything.
Other than master and servant.
Other than master and servant.
You are naturally my master.
You are naturally my master.
And I am naturally your servant.
And I am naturally your servant.
We have no other relationship.
We have no other relationship.
Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jive Sharup Hai Krishna Nitya Das. Every living being is eternally a servant of Supreme Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Bhoktaram Jagga Tapusham Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. I am the proprietor of all planets and I am the supreme enjoyer. This is the natural position of the Lord. And the natural position of the living being is to surrender unto Him. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sarvanam raja. If this relationship continues, then real happiness exists eternally between the master and servant. Unfortunately, when this eternal relationship is disturbed, the living being wants to become separately happy and thinks that the master is his or the supplier. In this way, there cannot be happiness, nor should the master cater to the desires of the servant. If he does, he is not the real master. The real master commands, you must do this, and the real servant immediately obeys the order. Unless this relationship between the Supreme Lord and the subordinate living entity is established, there can be no real happiness. The living entity is Ashraya, always subordinate, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Vishaya, the supreme objective, the goal of life. Unfortunate persons trapped in this material world do not know this. Nate vidu sartha gatim hi Vishnu. Illusioned by the material energy, everyone in this material world is unaware that the only aim of life is to approach Lord Vishnu. Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnur aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. In the Padma Puran, Lord Shiva explains to his wife Parvati, the goddess Durga, that the highest goal of life is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, who can be satisfied only when his servant is satisfied. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore teaches Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayur Dasho Dashanudasa. One must become a servant of the servant. Prahlad Maharaj also prayed to Lord Nrsimhadeva that he might be engaged as a servant of the Lord's servant. This is the prescribed method of devotional service. As soon as a devotee wants the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be his order supplier, the Lord immediately refuses to become the master of such a motivated devotee. In Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says, Je yathaman prapadante tam tathiva bhajamaham. As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. Materialistic persons are generally inclined to material profits. As long as one continues in such an adulterated position, he does not receive the benefit of returning back to Godhead. Om Agyanati Nirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam Bande Aham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadukamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Raghunathanitam Tvam Shajivam Shadvaitam Shabudhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Shahugana Laita Sri Vishakhanvitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpati Gopesha Gopika Kanto Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanushute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Bancha Kalpatarubhascha Kripa Sindhu Hari Vacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vadana Shiva Shri Govinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Aham to kamas tad bhaktas tamcha swami anapashraya Nanda Theha Vayur Artho Raju Sevatayoriva. O my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master, and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. So Prahlad Maharaj is offering prayer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Nrsimhadeva. Actually, the prayers of a devotee is very beautiful, and it's an expression of devotee's love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can see the situation at the time. Prahlad Maharaj was just a little boy, just a six-year-old boy. Nrsimhadeva just killed his father, Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu tortured Prahlad in so many different ways that the Lord ultimately had to come in order to protect his devotee and kill him. And because of that, the Lord was very, very angry. And that is the time when Prahlad Maharaj is offering his prayers. Nrsimhadeva was so angry that no one even dared to go near him. Even Brahma didn't dare to go. Shiva didn't dare to go. Lakshmi Devi didn't dare to go. But Brahma pushed Prahlada. Prahlada, you go, pacify the world. And Prahlada started to offer his prayers. And soon after 2-3 verses we will see, from I think 10th verse onward, Lord Nrisimhadev, 11th verse, the Nrisimhadev started to respond, explaining to Prahlad that how dear he is to the Lord. So that is the reciprocation between the devotee and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee offers all his love to the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead showers all his affection upon his devotee. And this relationship or this reciprocation is very important in any relationship. Relationship cannot be one-sided. It's not that just one person keeps on loving the other and the other person doesn't reciprocate. Then that relationship will not last. So the relationship with the Lord, between the Lord and his devotees, is very natural because there is this reciprocation. The devotee loves the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead reciprocates by loving him in exchange. And as a matter of fact, there is a competition of love in exchange between the Lord and his devotees. The devotee loves the Lord reciprocates by loving him even more. Then the devotee reciprocates by offering his love even more. And then the Lord offers him even more love. Actually, anyone in his right consciousness can understand how much the Supreme Personality of Godhead loves us. If we consider all the arrangements that he has made for us, actually even before we came, we see before a child is born, Krishna makes arrangements for the child's food and everything. When the child is in the mother's womb, Krishna makes all kinds of arrangements. Although it is very painful for a living entity to stay in this material nature, but Krishna makes all the arrangements to make his stay comfortable. We see that just as the child is born, the mother's breast becomes filled with milk. So this is Krishna's arrangement for providing the food for the baby. The child cannot eat rice or digest other things. All he needs is the mother's milk. And it automatically comes. The perfect food for the child is provided by the Lord. We need air to breathe. Krishna has provided us with all the air that we need. And not only Krishna provided for the air, but Krishna has made such a wonderful arrangement that there won't be any scarcity of air. Like in the material nature, everything is exhausted in due course of. Like if we just keep on taking oxygen in the atmosphere, someday there won't be any more oxygen left. But Krishna made the perfect ecological balance whereby the human beings are taking the oxygen and giving out carbon dioxide, and the trees and plants are taking carbon dioxide and giving out the oxygen. So it's a perfect ecological balance that Krishna made. We are seeing the sun is supplying the energy for so many billions and zillions of years. But sun's energy is never exhausted. But in our house, if we use the coal for a few days, then after a while the coal is finished. So we have to get a new supply. But Krishna in the nature has made arrangements that there will never be a lack of anything. There will never be any scarcity of anything. Krishna has provided with everything that we need, and Krishna has made arrangement for a continuous supply, inexhaustible supply. But man is destroying the nature. Krishna's nature is perfect. Om Purna Madha Purna Midam Purnat Purna Mudachati. Krishna is Purna, complete and perfect. And anything that is in relation to Krishna, anything that comes from Krishna is also Purna. Purnat Purna Mudachati. Anything that comes from that Purna is also Purna. Therefore, because this nature is coming from Krishna, is also Purna. Nature is perfect and complete. But the trouble starts when man puts his hand in the nature. He destroys everything. Like we notice, Krishna invented trees to maintain the ecological balance. That we would take oxygen and give out carbon dioxide, and trees will take the carbon dioxide and give So Krishna created trees and plants to maintain the ecological balance, and man created machines, automobiles, to destroy the ecological balance. Man created machines, and what these machines are doing? They are burning oxygen and giving out carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide. And the whole atmosphere is vitiated, polluted. Therefore, it is better that the man doesn't put his hand into anything. He just sits back and just tries to become Krishna conscious. That's the best thing that a man can do. Otherwise, all the arrangements he makes to make the nature more beautiful or more useful, they end up making the nature more and more unpleasant and destructive. So, any man in his right consciousness, when he thinks how much Krishna loves him, then he will immediately see. It is not that we have to love Krishna to receive his love. No, even before he even started to love Krishna, Krishna is expressing his love for us. But actually, when we begin to love him, then we begin to appreciate that how much he is already doing for us. He is already doing so much for us. Without Krishna's mercy, without Krishna's divine arrangement, this nature wouldn't have been there yet at the first place. Without Krishna's divine arrangement, nothing would have been here for our existence. We would have been in an extremely miserable condition. As it is, the material nature is miserable, it would have become even more miserable if Krishna did not make all the arrangements. And of course, there is no question of Krishna's not making any arrangements, because Krishna is so perfect that everything is already arranged by him. Like even before the creation started, Krishna made arrangements that the living entities can go back to body. Even before the living entities were sent to this material nature, he made the arrangements. Brahma was instructed with the spiritual knowledge. And why did Krishna give Brahma the spiritual knowledge? Tene Brahmarida Adikavaye Muihanti Jatsuraya. The knowledge that bewilders even the most learned scholars, that knowledge Krishna imparted in the heart of Brahma for two reasons. One reason is the external and internal. The external reason is so that the living entities, those who come to the material nature, they can understand what is the purpose of their stay in this material nature and how to utilize their material nature for their ultimate. That is, one aspect is how to use the material nature as long as one is in the material nature. But that is the external reason of the Vedas. And the internal purpose of the Vedas, how a living entity can go back to God. And And that is the most important aspect of the Vedas. And that aspect is of the Vedas is called Bhagavat. And the word Bhagavat means, it has two connotations. One is about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and about His devotees. How one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how one can become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the purpose of the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam has been described as Arthoyam Brahma Sutrana Bharatartha Vinayana Gayatri Bhashya Rupasu Vedasya Parivrindita. So, the Bhagavatam has been described. What is Srimad Bhagavatam? Arthoyam Brahma Sutra. Brahma Sutra, what is the Brahma Sutra? Brahma Sutra is the essence of the Vedas. Just like if we take milk, then we boil the milk, then we churn the milk, then we get the cream. And then, by boiling the cream, we get the ghee. So this way, the entire Vedas were churned and they got the ghee or the cream, the essence of the Vedas, that's Brahma Sutra. Vedanta Sutra. But this Vedanta Sutra is in a kind of a formula, in very, very concise manner. So it's very difficult for one to understand what is the meaning of the Vedanta Sutra. Now this Vedanta Sutra has been further elaborated, like the ghee was made, and then after that, it has been explained what is this ghee. And that explanation is Srimad Bhagavatam. You all remember how Vyasadeva got the Vedanta Sutra. He wrote all the, he divided the Vedas into four, then he wrote the Puranas and Upanishads, and then he wrote Mahabharata, and then finally he wrote Vedanta Sutra. So the cream of the Vedas was given in the form of Vedanta Sutra. But still Vyasadeva was not satisfied. Within his heart he was feeling dissatisfaction. Therefore Narad Muni came and instructed Vyasadeva to elaborate this Vedanta Sutra. And that elaboration of Vedanta Sutra is Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually what does Vedanta Sutra does? Vedanta Sutra focuses all the Vedic wisdom into one point. And what is that one point? That one point is Krishna. And then that point is explained or elaborated in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the meaning of the Vedanta Sutras is in Srimad Bhagavatam. Arthoyam Brahma Sutrana. And Bharatartha Vinirnaya. Bharat means Mahabharata. Mahabharata is the history. Like in one hand we find Vedanta Sutra, which is just the summary of the Vedas. And then at the same time we find Mahabharata, which is the history of India. All the activities of great personalities in India, including the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, has been described in Mahabharata. Mahabharata is actually a very interesting reading because it tells about so many wonderful stories. It's all, history is actually stories. Activities of great, great personalities. How, what they did, in which family they were born, etc. So, and naturally these activities of great personalities are very, very interesting. So Mahabharata was actually meant for the low-class people, those who are not very educated, intellectually those who are not very advanced, for them Mahabharata was written. But the understanding of Mahabharata, the real meaning of Mahabharata, Bharatartha Vinirnaya, has been done in Srimad Bhagavatam. So we can see that Bhagavatam is elaborating the meaning or purpose of Brahma Sutra, and Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining the meaning of Mahabharata. Now there is another aspect of the Vedic knowledge, Gayatri. What is Gayatri? How many of you, how many Brahmins are here? Please raise your hands. Very good. So the Brahmanas chant Gayatri. So what is the purpose of chanting Gayatri? Gayatri is the seed of the Vedic wisdom. Actually, Brahma received the knowledge from Krishna in the beginning in the form of Gayatri. And by chanting Gayatri, the Vedas were revealed in the heart of Brahma. Therefore, another name of Gayatri is Veda Mata. Just as a child is born out of the mother, similarly, the Vedas were born, or the Vedic wisdom was born from the Gayatri Mantra. So, Gayatri Bhashya, also, that this Srimad Bhagavatam is the Bhashya, means the purport or explanation of Gayatri Mantra. What Gayatri is saying has been explained in Srimad. Gayatri is just a mantra. Now, when one chants the mantra, one must understand what the mantra is. So the understanding of the Gayatri is in Srimad Bhagavatam. And all the Vedas, Vedaishya, Sarva Vedaishya Paribrihita. Now all the Vedas have been revealed. The purpose or the meaning of the entire Vedas have been explained in Srimad. So this Bhagavat is the ultimate knowledge. The Vedas means knowledge. Knowledge, actually knowledge also has two aspects. One is material knowledge, the other is spiritual. And according to the Vedic understanding, or according to the absolute understanding, the knowledge about matter is not. That is considered to be avidya or ignorance. Somebody may think one may think that when somebody gets a lot of material knowledge, knowledge about matter, knowledge about this material world, he is very learned. But no, actually, the more so-called knowledge he acquires about matter, bigger of a fool he becomes. He is not acquiring knowledge. He is acquiring ignorance. He is filling his brain with a lump of garbage. The more material information he collects is actually a lump of collection of garbage. Therefore, Krishna said that those who are collecting this material knowledge, they are actually mayaya aparhita jnana. Mayaya apurhito jnana means whose knowledge has been stolen by Maya. So this so-called materially educated or materially learned people are simply people whose knowledge has been stolen by Maya. And when the knowledge is stolen by Maya, in plain and simple words, what he is called? He is called a fool. Of course, people will object, why do you say things like that? We are not saying it. Krishna said it. So, and we can see, actually I remember Satsang Maharaj wrote an article once. He was explaining that how actually these so-called scholars, the scientists and philosophers, they are big, big fools. And he makes an example, he makes a point. Like, because it is very difficult to convince them. about Krishna. Just like the more ignorant one is, longer time it takes to make him understand. And a person who is intelligent, he understands very quickly. Now, these scientists and scholars, they actually take a very long time because they won't accept things straight away. They have to be informed, they have to be convinced in so many different ways. And this is actually, it's not that they're not intelligent, they have their intelligence. They're actually very intelligent. But their intelligence has become so crooked that a simple thing cannot enter straight into their mind. So, in this way we can see that materialistic knowledge is not actually knowledge, it's ignorance. So it is said that avidya. Dhuliya rohile tumi avidyaru. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is singing. It's so unfortunate that you have simply got lost in the world of ignorance. Being influenced by ignorance, you simply got lost. Now one may wonder, then shouldn't one accept this knowledge? Yes, one can accept this material knowledge, provided it is used in Krishna's service. Then it becomes like, if ignorance is zero, then Krishna is one, and just putting Krishna next to that zero has its meaning. So if someone has material knowledge, he must use it in Krishna's service. Then only that avidya becomes vidya. So that Gyan or Vidya is the Vedas. The real knowledge is in Vedas. And when the knowledge of the Vedas are churned, then ultimately comes out Srimad Bhagavatam. Just as we find there are two examples in Srimad Bhagavatam. One is Nigamo Kalpa Tarur Golitam Phanam. The Vedas are like a desire tree. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the desire tree. And that fruit is not only ripened, and this transcendental fruit is so wonderful that it doesn't have any skin or it doesn't have any seed or stone. It is all pulp and juice. Now that wonderful fruit of Nigama Kalpa Tarur, the ripened fruit of the desire tree, has been pecked or tested by Supa Mukhad Amrita Drava Samjita. Has been blended with the nectar from the mouth of Sukadeva Goswami. And Pivata Bhagavata Rasamalayam Muhuraha Rashika. Those who are rasika, those who know how to taste, they constantly taste this nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, one must be able to taste it. One must be able to appreciate the taste. If one doesn't have the ability to appreciate the taste, then he wouldn't understand what it is. Sometimes we see, like in India, which is a very big producer of tea. You get tea testers, and they get a lot of money. Of course, according to Indian standards, their job is considered to be very expert. Because they, just by taking the taste of the tea, they can figure out what should be the grade of the tea. Like some teas are low grade and some teas are very high grade. According to their certificate, the tea is sold in the auction. Some tea that is rated very high, it is sold with a very high price. And some tea that is rated as low by the tea testers. And what they do is they just take a sip of the tea. They don't even drink the tea. They just take a sip and pull it within in a certain way that they simply take the flavor and the taste. And anyway, the point is that in order to appreciate something, In order to appreciate the value of something, one must know how to taste it. So that is called rasika. In the West also, you get wine testers, right? So they are also some kind of rasikas. Because rasika, the word rasika comes from the word rasa. The rasa means taste. Rasoham apshu kaunteya, the taste of water. So different things have taste. But in the material nature, they are taking the taste of poison. Like tea is actually poison. Wine is actually poison. So in the material nature, they are trying to derive the taste, rasa, from the poison. That's why ultimately they die. The ultimate end of this material nature is death. But the spiritual taste is derived out of nectar. On the spiritual platform, the taste is derived out of nectar. So, one has to be a rasika of nectar in order to appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam. In the material nature, living entities have become perverted. Their taste has become perverted. So in the material nature, they are not rasikas. Those who are able to taste. But in the material nature, they are expert in enjoying sufferings. Actually, what they consider to be enjoyment in the material nature actually is suffering. For example, as I was saying, people think that drinking wine is enjoyment. Now, in plain simple words, in English, wine and other such things are termed as intoxicant. The word intoxicant is coming from the word toxin. Is it in German also? The word toxin? Toxic gas. So what does it mean, toxic?
Poisonous.
So now you can tell me, what does intoxicant mean? Intoxicant means intaking poison. So they are actually, they know that they are taking poison. Like, and now will any sane man accept that by taking poison one is going to enjoy? But that's what they're doing. In the material platform, they think that by taking poison they're going to enjoy. So that's why in the material nature they do not know how to enjoy. They simply know how to suffer. And they, by taking more and by accepting more and more suffering, they think that it is actually enjoyment. Like it is a known fact in India or in the Oriental countries, that when people take intoxicants, they actually have to take it in a greater and greater dose and in higher and higher degree. For example, one may start off with a plain, simple cup of tea. Then the tea will lead to a cigarette. Then cigarette will lead to alcohol. Then alcohol will lead to some marijuana. And then it will come to opium. They have many opium derivatives. Those days in India or in those countries, there was no such derivatives of opium like heroin and... Anyway, I'm not an expert in that. But ultimately what they used to do, they used to take a snake bite. They would take this, they would become immune even to opium. By taking opium, they wouldn't get any kick. So in order to get a kick, they would take a snake bite. And it's a very common thing. It was a very common thing. Especially in China. And what kind of snakes? Cobra. And actually they themselves would become poisonous. So people, just by coming in contact with them, would die. So this is what material nature is like. Like in the name of enjoyment, they inflict more and more suffering. And they think, oh, we are enjoying so much. And that's what it is. Like in every respect, sex life is considered to be the highest enjoyment. But actually it's the highest form of suffering. But the real enjoyment is in the spiritual platform. The real enjoyment comes from tasting the nectar of spiritual existence. And those who know how to taste the nectar, they are called rasikas. So just as I was telling, like these tea tasters and wine tasters, they can derive the value of the wine or tea by tasting. Those who are rasikas, they know what is the value of different types of, different grades of nectar. And what is the highest grade of nectar? What is the finest quality of nectar on the spiritual platform? Srimad Bhagavatam. And that has been described. Why? Because it is a fruit of the desire tree. And not only it's a fruit of the desire tree, desire tree means that the tree that can fulfill all our desires. So the fruit of that tree must be so wonderful. And that is not only the fruit of that tree, but it's the most ripened fruit. And that ripened fruit has been tasted by Sukadeva Goswami. It's been picked by Sukadeva Goswami's lips. That's why it is the most wonderful. And actually there is even more wonderful nectar. Like, actually as it becomes more and more refined by the touch, just as the ripened fruit of Srimad Bhagavatam, ripened fruit of desire tree, Srimad Bhagavatam has been mixed or touched by the lips of Sukadeva Goswami, that's why it has become even more delicious. Now, this Bhagavatam again has been further touched by the lips of Sanatana Goswami in the form of Brihad Bhagavatam. Therefore that is even more nectarian. Or there is Laghu Bhagavatam also by Rupa Goswami. And then there are Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, they have churned this nectar, or nectarian ocean of Srimad Bhagavatam, and they further modify, must further refine the nectar. So this is how it has become more and more relishable. And as we are seeing here, Prahlad Maharaj is describing the glory of becoming a devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. In this particular verse, what Prahlad Maharaj is saying, that materialistic people do not know how to derive the real benefit out of their existence. Nate vidu sartha gatim hi vishnu. Durashaya je bahirartha manina. Andha gathandhai upaniya manam. Te pi ashi urutam. What's the last line? Te pi isha tantra urudam nivartha. Te pi isha tesha tantra urudam nivartha. So here we can see like the condition of the materialistic people. Nate vidu sartha gatim hi vishnu. They do not know, those people, these materialistic people do not know what is actually their real benefit. They do not know that the real benefit actually lies in developing the relationship with Vishnu. Sartha gati, swartha means real benefit of oneself. And that is Vishnu. Durashaya, they have become attracted by all kinds of unwanted things. Materialistic life. Externally they are being dragged by their senses towards the objects of the senses. But the ultimate goal of this object being dragged by the objects of the senses is simply suffering. Bohirartha manina. Bohi means externally. They are being dragged externally towards the material nature. And as a result of that, they are becoming more and more miserable. Their condition is just like a group of blind people, andha jathaiva, andhar upaniyaman. They are simply being led by another blind man. A group of blind people are being led by another blind man. And that blind man is also conditioned by the material nature. He, like these people are bound and blind. This is the condition of the materialistic people. Now they are being led by another person who is a blind himself, and he is also bound in this material nature. So how can he ever lead them? And where will they end up by being led by such a person? What is the goal? What is the destiny? He will just fall in a ditch. So that is the condition of materialistic people. But a person who is situated in the spiritual platform by becoming a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is being led by the Lord Himself. As soon as a living entity surrenders unto the Lord, then the Lord takes care of him. Actually, Krishna wants to take care of living entities under all circumstances. Krishna wants to take charge of the living entity. But Krishna doesn't, as long as the living entity wants to maintain his independence. When the living entity wants to be independent, Krishna says, okay, go ahead, become independent. And that's why Krishna actually makes this material nature a place where a living entity gets a chance to become independent. But still, Krishna is so merciful that he goes along with the living entity, being situated in the heart. Very excited, and Krishna's devotees are telling us time and time and time again. Jivev Sarup Hai Krishna Nityadashi. You are simply a servant of Krishna. So become a servant of Krishna. And then you will see yourself what happens to you. By becoming a servant of Krishna, one doesn't lose. But by becoming a servant of Krishna, one's life becomes so peaceful. When we know that we have a master who is our greatest well-wisher, then why should we worry about anything? And that's why a devotee is careful. A devotee is fearless. A devotee is completely free from anxiety. Because devotee is like a child who is holding on to his father's hand. And who is the father? The father is the most powerful, most opulent, and most well-known person in this world. So when we have a father like that, why should we worry about him? And that is the position of the devotee. So the real auspiciousness comes when we become a surrendered soul at Krishna's lotus feet. And of course, and here another point is that although initially one may think that he will surrender unto Krishna, but when one tries to surrender, when one takes the process of surrender, then he realizes that the best way to surrender to Krishna is through Krishna's representative, Krishna's devotee. That also has been explained in the purport here by Srila Prabhupada, that Lord Shiva is telling Parvati in Padma Purana that of all the worship of Vishnu is the greatest. But even greater than that is the worship of his devotees. So the best way to approach, and those devotees are the Vaishnavas. So the best way to approach Krishna is through the Vaishnavas, and in the association of Vaishnavas, we find one Vaishnava who we feel like taking shelter of completely by surrendering ourselves to him. And that Vaishnava is the spiritual master. So our whole philosophy is resting on that. Adau Gurvashraya. At the beginning of spiritual life, And all the spiritual life begins with the surrender to the bona fide spiritual master. At the beginning, Adu, the spiritual life begins with the surrender, from the point of surrendering unto the bona fide spiritual master. And then the process is there, Bhagavatam is there to guide us, the Vaishnavas are there, the spiritual master is there, and if we take shelter of these three, sadhu, shastra and guru, then we will reach the destination, Krishna's lotus feet, without any difficulty. It has been guaranteed. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Sachinanand Maharaj, will you make some comment?
In Padma Purana it has been said that the greatest obstacle
I don't have a comment, but I request you to kindly speak on this statement from Padma Purana that said that the greatest obstacle to surrender is actually false conception, false identity, false ego. Everyone carries that knot in the heart with himself or herself, how to overcome it. It's a severe obstacle and a strong thing. So how do you cut that false ego and then come to the where they think independently from Krishna you can define your existence and your happy life? What is your advice to us?
My advice to you is that you give the answer. Why don't you give that?
In the Bhagavatam, this point is expressed in the second chapter of the first canto, where it says that the conditioned soul is changed by this false ego in the heart. Mm-hmm. Now the process to cut the false ego is to first of all develop taste in the transcendental topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This taste can only be developed, the Bhagavatam says, by serving those great devotees who are immersed in Krishna consciousness. Then, after the service has been done to the great devotees, Srimata Svakata Krishna continues hearing, and the Lord in the heart becomes satisfied and removes all type of dirty things from within the heart. However, a repeated hearing must still go on. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, and also repeated service to the spiritual master. Or the Bhagavatam devotees must go on, because these dirty conditions in the heart, contaminations, are very, very strong. It's just like the smell of camphor, which even after you purify the box, it still lingers on in the box. So the dirty conditions, contaminations in the heart, are almost destroyed by hearing and serving. They're not completely destroyed in the beginning. But as one goes on, finally the modes of passionate ignorance go and the man becomes enlivened by being on the platform of goodness and then transcendental goodness. And then, when there is a transcendental Krishna consciousness, then the not in the false ego, the knot of the false ego is destroyed. This is the process the Bhagavatam gives or the answer the Bhagavatam gives. However, I still would really like you to comment, because devotees aren't doing this process to some extent or not, but they still suffer, and therefore we must now associate with the great soul, His Holiness Bhakti Swarupa Maharaj, and then we will get the taste and the right understanding. This is how the Bhagavatam says it must be done.
Sometimes I feel happy that I did the right thing, and here I feel very happy that I asked you to answer the question, because you answered it so beautifully. So what can I say after that? Right. Well, I'll just go to the essence of it. Like, what is the false ego? Literally the word false ego means mistaken identity. False identity. Now, our real identity is we are servants of But when you forget that and take up a different identity, that is the false ego. And that different identity, in general, is called upadhi, designations. We have only one designation, and that is Jiver Sarup Parakrishna Nityavas. Our only identity, our only upadhi, is that we are the servants of Krishna. But forgetting that, we develop all kinds of other identities, and that is called, and that is the cause of our false ego. Therefore, the understanding is sarvabhadi binirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. That paratvena nirmalam, we become transcendentally purified only when we become free from all these designations. So, and these designations ultimately come to one point, and that is, instead of becoming a servant of Krishna, we are trying to be the master of this material nature. So as long as we mistakenly think that we are the masters of this material nature, or we can enjoy in this material nature, we will be trapped by this false ego. Which, as you say, Vridaya Granthi, the knot in the heart. The spirit soul is situated in the heart. And in the heart, the spirit soul is very securely tied up with the knot of false ego. And the false ego is desiring, oh, I want this, I want that. So these desires are actually the Vridaya Granthi. We are thinking that we are enjoyers and we want to enjoy. We want this, we want that. We want the whole world. But when we just give up that misconception and become a servant of Krishna, then only we can become free. So it begins, the process actually begins with the endeavor to become a servant of Krishna. Jiver Sarup by Krishna Nitya Das. And then there is the process that the step-by-step, as you mentioned so eloquently, how the living entity becomes free. Srinnatam sa katha Krishna punna sravana kirtana riddantasva abhudrani vidhunanti surit sata nashtu prayeshu abhudreshu nittam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttam shloke bhakti bhavati. So this brings us up to the point of Naishtiki Bhakti. Nishtha, Adar Shraddha, Tato Sadhu Sangha, Atanartha Nibhriti, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nibhriti, then Nishtha. When her Riddhantastha Abhadrani, the Anartha, another name of the Anartha is Abhadra, impurities. So this Riddhantastha Abhadrani, all these impurities in the heart become Bidhunati Suhit Sata, is washed away. And when it becomes washed away, all these abhadras, then we become nishtha. We come to the platform of nishtika. And as you say, like, that's, it's not complete freedom from anarthas. It's nashto prayeshu. almost free from the impurity. And as you very aptly pointed it, the camphor, even the camphor has been taken out of the box, but the fragrance of the camphor is still there in the box. So abhadra, all the dirty things in the heart have been washed away, but still the stink is there. And that is the namsta prayasya of abhadrish. Now how to get rid of the stink? So then as we gradually develop nishtha, ruchi, ashakti ruchi, bhav and prem. And only at the stage of prem it is completely left. When the beautiful fragrance from the lotus feet of Krishna permeates the entire atmosphere, then the stink automatically disappears. Yes.
About the shloka, the self, to be a very self-confident, that he says, I'm from karmas, but not does.
Oh, I see.
And yesterday we heard about Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayer for
Well, you see, when we try to understand the prayer or some statement of a devotee, we have to stand on the devotee's shoes and try to feel why he's speaking that. We can't take a critical view that, oh, Prahlad Maharaj is so puffed up, he is saying, I am your devotee, I am your unmotivated devotee. They will never be able to understand a devotee's mood. Therefore, the statement is Karpu of Pratishtha. When it comes to a devotional platform, there is no room for argument, no room for criticism. Well, let's just try to get tuned up to the feeling of it. Why he is saying it? Let's try to feel that. Is he saying it out of his arrogance that I am your devotee? Or he is saying it out of his absolute surrender? So that is the important thing.
Now he says it's because of his absolute surrender.
Yes. Okay. Just let's imagine a 6-year-old boy who had gone through so much. And under all circumstances, he just maintained his faith in Krishna. And Krishna himself saved him time and time again. And that person, that little boy, 6-year-old boy, is offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of God, who personally came to save him. So can there be any tinge of false ego or self-confidence? A devotee's mood is of total surrender. Yes, Jagannath Prabhu.
With Prahlad be considered actually the disciple of Narada, because when he was in his mother's womb, he actually heard first of the gospel.
Yeah. Narada Muni is the origin of spiritual master. Like whenever somebody is making advancement, even if he is initiated by others, Narada Muni comes and helps him. One example is the Gop Kumar. Gop Kumar was duly initiated by a pure devotee. And he reached all the way up to Dwarka. But even in Dwarka, he was not feeling satisfied. In the spiritual Dwarka. He is in association with Krishna, still he is not feeling fully satisfied. So then Narada Muni came and asked him, what's the matter with you? And then when Narada Muni heard him, then Narada Muni said, oh, you actually belong to Golok Vrindavan. And so the way to Golok Vrindavan, you can't go to Golok Vrindavan. So the best way is that you go back to the earth planet, in the earthly Vrindavan, you perform Sankirtan there, and that is the way. So you can see that Narada Muni came as a spiritual master, and as Shiksha Guru he gave direction.
One more comment.
Yes.
Also, Narada Muni sort of exemplifies the point that Satchananda Maharaj was making about the association of a pure devotee, because in his previous life, you know, he was Satchananda. One time, he became about Satchananda.
Right.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I mean, the actually to make spiritual advancement, the mercy of the devotee is the only means. By the mercy of the devotees only we can make spiritual advancement. No, that way.
All right. Could you elaborate a little bit more about the difference between jnana and vijnana?
So at least you are, yeah, good. So, well, maybe you got the question. What is the difference between vijnana and jnana? Vijnana and vijnana. So he wants to elaborate on that. Okay, so we discussed what is the difference between ajnana and jnana. Ignorance and knowledge. The spiritual knowledge is jnana and material knowledge is ajnana. Now, that when the spiritual knowledge becomes realized, you see, we can theoretically understand something. So when you theoretically understand something, then it is jnana. But when you practically realize something, then it is vijnana. For example, through the scriptures, we get to know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. So that is jnana. But when we see Krishna face to face, then it is vijnana. Or we can put it also in this way. See, in the altar we have the deities. So we may theoretically understand that these deities are the Supreme Personality of God. So that is jnana. But when we have that total understanding from the depth of our heart, that this is the person who is the Supreme Personality of God, who performed his pastimes in Navadvip and whose eternal pastimes are still going on in Golok, and who is Krishna and Balaram, who is none other than Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. This personality is here in the world. So when that realization dawns within our hearts, then it is. So knowledge and realization. Knowledge is gain and realization is gain. Also, it can be explained in this way. There are different stages of realization, understanding something. So one is first thing is shravan, hearing. Then varan, accepting. So then ultimately it is called apandasha. When it becomes my own, it becomes a part of my existence, then that is realization. Yes? You want to say something?
Well, is there a possibility that one has a feeling that one has already received part of vijnana, that it's not really, sometimes one has a feeling or makes realizations. So is there a possibility to verify that, whether one has really got that mercy of who began?
Well, it's a matter of, you see, like, it's a matter of inner realization. Like, you feed from within. Especially, for example, the food is there. Right? And to have that understanding that I'm hungry and if I eat the food, then my hunger will subside. So this part is gain, right? And then you eat the food, and then you feel satisfied from within. That is vijnana, right? That is realization. And the symptoms are there, you know, like when you eat, your hunger subsides, and you feel strong, if you're not suffering from indigestion. So that is from, you know, after you eat the food, you yourself realize that now you are satisfied. Somebody, there is no need to come and so, well, I ate the food and now how am I going to verify whether I have been fully satisfied? There is no need for verification. It will happen within him. A devotee doesn't worry about that. Whether I am real, am I in a jnana stage or am I in a vijnana stage? Devotees don't worry about that. devotee's feeling is that all I have to do is surrender to Krishna. So let me just try to do that. And all the side effects are secondary.
Prabhupada sometimes speak about this, the six, so Prabhupada sometimes speaks about this six philosophers, Chaitanya, and I ask you if there is some connection with the Vedas, I mean, can you say this Vedic philosophies? Because I asked my sister, so-called yoga teacher, and she said that I read also Vedic scriptures, I read this Pantra, this Yoga Sutra.
Yes. Yeah, there are six branches of philosophy. They are known as Naya, Vaisheshika. Now first is Purva Mimamsa, Naya, Vaisheshika, Shankha, Yoga, and Uttar Mimamsa, Vedanta Sutra. So, out of that, you see the way it has been presented by certain philosophers. You see, the subject matters are there. And, you know, there are different branches of Veda. It's undeniable. You know, like. But the thing is, it depends who is presenting it. For example, say Shankha, there are two types of Shankha. The original Shankha was given by Kapila, the son of Devahuti. So that is actually, that is a theistic Shankha. That accept God, and the whole purpose is actually to reveal the identity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there is an atheistic Sankha, which is presented by another Kapila, which is known as atheistic Kapila or Nirisha Kapila. Now that Sankha is actually atheistic. Now Patanjali's Yoga is actually theistic. The original yoga of Patanjali is theistic. Theistic actually means that they accept the Lord. And they accept that the purpose of yoga is to fix the meditation on the Supreme Personality, to fix the mind at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So if that understanding is there, then it is alright. Then it's a part of the Veda, because it's theistic. Prabhupada was actually mentioning in one of the discussions the same point about the yoga. He said, yes, original yoga by Patanjali is theistic, because that describes about Krishna being the ultimate goal of life. But are you accepting it? This so-called yoga teaching. Do you accept that Krishna is the goal of life? Krishna is the ultimate objective of your yoga meditation? No. You are just trying to sit at one place and let your mind think of all kinds of garbage. So that is not yoga.
So that,
that is bio. Yoga means plus, right? To be linked with the Lord. But this is yoga means minus. They become more attached to matter by thinking that, well, I want to have a good health, so let me practice yoga. I want to have a good digestive system. The Giriraj Maharaj once was telling me that one of the yoga teachers that he met when he was, before he joined, and the yoga teacher was teaching that how to reverse the colon so in such a way, I mean, how to adjust your colon, digestive system, in such a way that you can have a good motion. You can pass stool nicely. Is this the purpose of the yoga? No, you see, Uttar Mimamsa is the karma Mimamsa. Their conclusion is the karma is the ultimate. So everything is happening due to karma. So the way it has been presented, you know, in that philosophy, They're atheistic. They're not accepting God because they're saying that it is all, everything is due to your karma. So if everything is happening according to your karma, there's no need for God. Because everything is happening according to your karma.
That's how Krishna preached to Nanda Maharaj? Is it,
Well, he gave that logic. He gave that logic. Yeah. It's not that he was preaching. Like, he said that if it's a matter of rainfall, then it will happen automatically.
No need for...
Right. He actually smashed this karma mimamsa. That action is the karma is the ultimate consideration. Now, Vaisheshika also leads to a similar kind of... Vaisheshika is, in plain and simple words, is atomic theory. That the whole creation is due to... everything is ultimately atom. So there is no room for God. Naya is logic. So they're also, like logic has different aspects of, how to argue and how to analyze things, but they don't ultimately accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Shankar, as I mentioned, so yoga also, and then finally the Vedanta Sutra, the Mayavadis have turned it into a completely different thing. Like, so this is how it can all be atheistically presented. But the original thing, or original side of it, can be also presented theistically. Like everything can be positively used or negatively used. See, the knife is not bad, but in the hand of a criminal, the knife is bad. But in the hand of a surgeon, knife is good. Right? So these philosophies, if they are used in a proper way, then they're positive, then they're good. So, for example, we can positively use the karma mimamsa, or uttara mimamsa, that everything is due to karma. Right? So good action leads to enjoyment, and bad action leads to suffering. Right? So let us all do good actions. What is the purpose of good action? To enjoy. Right? But in spite of doing all good actions, and in spite of making so many arrangements for enjoyment, we ultimately realize that we are not enjoying. We can't enjoy. Then one begins to wonder, why am I not enjoying? Why, in spite of trying so hard, I'm not able to enjoy. Then he begins to analyze it. Why am I not enjoying? So that will lead to the nine. At that stage one can use nine. Why I'm not enjoying? Through this analysis, he will see that this material nature is full of misery. Right? And then, say for example, we can take an example of nine. Like, one of the principles of Naya is that certain principle that applies in a smaller area, the result it produces in a smaller area, when you extend that area of application, it will produce the same result. Right? So the consideration is, like, let us see a part of my body, a finger. And let us see in how many ways I can give pleasure to this finger, and in how many ways I can give pain to this finger. Right? So, I can think of thousands of ways to give pain to this finger. But when it comes to giving pleasure to this finger, hardly any way I can give pleasure. Now, if this principle is applied to every single part of the body, it will produce the same result, come to the same conclusion, that this body is a wonderful instrument for receiving pain, and there is hardly any means by which you can derive pleasure out of this body. Right? So the conclusion is that this material nature is a wrong place for enjoyment. This material nature is full of suffering, full of misery.
And they analyzed actually 21 different types of miseries. Let me see if I can remember. Anyway, it's all right.
Well, it's very interesting.
There are six senses are the source of misery, six objects, six kinds of growth, then 18, then this material nature is the source of misery, then the concept of happiness is the source of misery, and misery itself is the source of misery. So then one will begin to wonder, but what is this material nature then? Then he will come to the conclusion that this material nature is composed of atoms. Ultimately, one will come to the understanding that this material nature is a combination of atoms. So there the Vaisheshika aspect will have its use, positive use. Then one begins to consider that what this material nature actually is, or what is my relation to this material nature. That is the Sankha aspect. Right. So Sankha initially analyzes the material nature, but then comes to understanding the spirit. The positive Sankha leads to God. Like we can put it this way, the 24 elements of this material nature, that is the analysis of Sankha. Five senses, five elements, five working senses, five knowledge acquiring senses, and five objects of the senses, 20. Right? Then mind, intelligence, and false ego, 23. And then Mahatattva, 24. So there it stops, you know, the external analysis. Then the 25th consideration, then the consideration is that this, all 24, is an objective analysis. But without the subject, object cannot exist. Right? Like the subject has to be there in order to experience the object. Now who is the subject? The subject is the 25th consideration. The subject is I. And the I is non-material, because the whole entire material nature has been analyzed with this 24 consideration. And still we couldn't find the I there. So the I is naturally non-material, hence I is spiritual. So this is how positive Sankha is actually transcending the material and coming to the spiritual platform. And then the consideration is that I am, or the spirit soul is, minute and many. Right? So anything that is minute and many has to have an origin, has to have a source. So that source is the Supreme Spirit, or the Super Soul. So that is the 26th consideration. So then the consideration is that what is the relationship between the minute spirit and the Supreme Spirit? And that is leading us to Yoga. That the relationship between the individual soul and the Supreme Soul, or the Supreme Personality of God. And after understanding attaining the Samadhi, one comes to a platform of understanding that the living entity is minute and the Supreme Personality of God is absolute, and he is a part and parcel of that absolute, and as a part and parcel, his business is to love, is to surrender unto him. Because it's a natural tendency of small to be submissive or surrender to great. And this is called prapatti or shaganagati. Like Satyanamaya Maharaj's land. So this shaganagati is the beginning of devotion.
He said, so through yoga we are coming to the point of Saranagati. And from Saranagati begins the devotion. So it can be used positively. But the point is that one has to have the right person to make them understand that. So, and for a devotee actually ultimately it doesn't really matter. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu studied Nyaya. He was the greatest logician. But when it came to ultimately, he threw everything away. Because it may help us to transcend the material platform, come to spiritual platform. But when it comes to, when one comes to spiritual platform, he has to discard all. There's no need for these things. Like on a spiritual platform, there's no need for yoga. One may practice yoga, one may become an expert yogi, but on the spiritual platform, there won't be any need for that. It has been explained in Prithu Maharaj's case. Prithu Maharaj was expert. He was an expert in yoga. You know, when he went to the forest, he became an expert in yoga. But because he developed his love for the Lord, it didn't have any utility anymore. Sachinanda Maharaj?
Can you just kindly enumerate, it's not a big question, just could you kindly enumerate what are the six growths? I remember it was becoming more happy, more rich.
Yeah. The six kind of growth is, there are six ways of becoming attached to the material nature. Like physically growing towards material nature, developing different types of opulences. You know, growing wealthy, growing healthy, growing beautiful. So ultimately they all actually tie us down to the material nature. So I think I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.